It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. Mix of sun and clouds today, whether you're brought to you by Shoemate, by the way. Will give way to cloudy skies this afternoon. High of 71. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low of 52. Monday afternoon showers, high of 68 and a low of 53. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Today, we've been talking about the big picture, demographics, the way the world is growing, and what countries are, and the impact on the economy and, of course, the stock market, and then going back to the demographic shift in the United States and what that means for housing and housing prices. This gigantic shift of the age in which we get married has really been a fascinating statistic that I've come to understand over the last several years. I've been writing about it over the past year. Remember, you go back to 1950, the average age to get married in America was in our really early 20s. Today, it's closer to 27, 28. So we've delayed how much we've delayed our household formation. And that's impacting how many people are living at home. Today, if you look at that giant population of 18 to 34-year-olds, it's the millennial group, it's 75 million plus people living at home with mom and dad is 32%. It's the most common of all the categories. Number two is cohabitating or being married, living in a house together at 31% versus 32%. Living alone or living as a single parent, 14%. And then the other scenario, roommates, living with grandparents, 22%. So you compare that to the 1960s, only 20% of adults live with their parents. And a whopping 62% of that group was married or lived together. So this is a gigantic demographic shift in America. And it's, of course, has an impact on housing. Now, the factors, of course, waiting to get married, number one, and a stagnant, a stagnant economy coming out of this giant and great recession that we lived through not that long ago. The dramatic drop in the percentage of young Americans getting, let's call it romantically involved, though, is a big difference. So let's talk about married and cohabitating. You look back at the census data. In the 1880s, it was 45%. In the 1940s, it was 46%. In 1960, it was 62%. We did a Facebook Live last week or the week before and talked about this. And it was amazing how, let's call it visceral people were, or how opinionated people were in watching this Facebook Live were about living at home with parents. I think if you're in your 50s and 60s, you look back and you say, there is no way I was living. I left the house at 18, Wes, and I stayed out. I never went back. And that's I think if you're in that generation, if you're a baby boomer, living at home with mom and dad at age 18 or age 22, didn't want to enter the conversation. Today, it's very different in America, where it's like, oh, you're 30, come on home, live at home for a little while. So again, then that's dropped all the way down now to from 62% cohabitating down to 31. So there's been this giant delay in the age in which we marry in America. Again, if I look at the marriage age, 1950, the average is 21, average age to get married. In the latest data, it's 27. So it's a big, big shift in when we get married, and it's delaying our household formation. It's delaying us saying, okay, we've got to get out there and buy some sort of property. So the interesting part of this is that if you look at housing data and you look at the housing inventory in the United States versus the vacant number of houses, yeah, we've continued to build homes. And there was a real slowdown, obviously, during the Great Recession, but that has continued. The number of houses in America has continued to go up, but the number of vacant houses has continued to go down since 2010. That means that, yeah, we're building houses, but there's less and less available houses to buy. Now, you couple that with this giant group of people living at home with mom and dad. And what does that mean for housing prices? Well, I guess the question to answer is, does this big part of the population, do they want to move out? Well, here's some statistics about that. Millennials, from what I can tell here, they still want to buy a home of their own. If they can't find one that's affordable, and then they're gonna continue to look until they do. So they're eventually gonna find something that suits them. There's another recent survey that says that 79% of millennials who are currently renting said they want to get out there and buy a home. The biggest obstacle, of course, in this group is affordability. 77% says affordability is the biggest barrier to ownership. Only 40% said they're waiting to settle down or get married before they buy a home. So part of that is that they'd get out there if they could do it, but a big part of it has to do with affordability as well. So there's a supply demand imbalance still in America. And if you look at all of the millennials that live in home, that's just pent up demand that eventually wants to get out there and buy a house. So if that's the case, I see housing prices to continue to go up. And it's the same thing here in Atlanta. If you look around, you see inventories have come down, the available houses for sale. It is certainly a scenario where I see housing prices continuing to have at least some sort of floor under them. The last caller we just had at the end of the first hour here of Money Matters was, or do you see a blip on the screen coming up in housing prices? And I just, at least in the short term, in the next year or so, I don't see that happening. That's where we're headed in the foreseeable future. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. We're going to go to the phones here just a second. Another topic I want to talk about, again, we're going back to demographics, the patterns we have as humans and consumers. There's been another really big shift that has to do with how we consume or how we spend money in America. And I call this Longhorn versus Lululemon. And I want to get to that in a little bit. It's talking about how we're spending our money in America. We're buying less and less stuff, less and less goods and services. We're trading that out for experiences. We're trading out how we spend our money and where it goes. And there's a lot that's said about how nobody's spending money anymore at stores because everything's going online to Amazon. And yes, that's a giant shift. But even more so, we're spending more and more on what I'll call experiences. And this is the Longhorn versus Lululemon effect. And we're going to talk about that in just a little bit here in this hour. Let's go to the phones, though. The number 404-872-0750. You have questions that impact your financial life, whether it's real estate or the stock market or a savings question or an educational funding question. Or now you're in charge of new money that you weren't in charge of before. Or a pension versus a lump sum question, or 401k, or IRA, or Roth. We're here to help you through that. And it's the fun part of Money Matters. The number 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Rob joins us from Atlanta. Rob, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on, man? How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. Thank you for taking my call. I recently had a death in my family, and I'm supposed to be getting my inheritance in the form of a trust between me and my two family members. And I don't know why I'm getting mine in a trust, but I was wanting to invest the majority of it because I have nothing saved for retirement. And once we split up everything, I need to know if my money is supposed to be going into a trust where I get, you know, a certain amount every month, which is not that much. It's just supposed to supplement what I'm making. What do you suggest I do that I can put it towards my retirement?
Well, okay, so this is a really interesting question here, Rob, is that I suspect then this is a trust. And first of all, of course, I'm sorry to hear about your loss, first of all.
Thank you.
Number two, the question is, it sounds like this is a relatively perpetual trust. Now, trusts don't last forever. In fact, there's legislation to change the length of how long a trust can last. But it sounds like this will have a corporate trustee. So is it, it's going to have a big name bank for the most part that's going to, that is technically...
No, it's supposed to be the executor of the will, which is the relative. And I'm wanting to take, you know, a certain amount out where I can pay off my credit card debt, maybe put some money into a car fund where if my car breaks down, I'm all about, you know, expect being prepared for the unexpected. But I'd say 95% of it, I want it to go towards my retirement. And there are other possibilities that I've heard about on WSB, other financial stuff that I've thinking about checking into as far as my retirement to make it grow over time. But that's basically the executor who will be controlling it is a relative. And that's what I'm really not
happy. That is a lot of family sticky situation. I mean, that's a tough scenario for you to be in with a family member that's the executor that also has direction on the investments, or do you get to decide?
I get to direct it. I'm just not happy about, I mean, he's getting his in a lump sum and the other relative is getting theirs in a lump sum.
And yours has to stay in a trust.
Mine's staying in a trust.
Okay, so listen, Rob, hang on one second. I've dealt with this scenario many, many times over the last almost 20 years. And I'm pretty familiar with these multifamily scenarios where some's in a trust, some is not. Hang on one more second. This is a very interesting topic. So hang on one more sec. Quick news, weather, traffic. We'll be right back with Rob here. You're listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We're going back to Rob. Rob, we're continuing the conversation. Let me ask you a couple of real quick questions in the essence of time. If you've got a couple routes here to go, the trust says that you can only receive income, correct?
That is correct. It's a certain amount that I'm supposed to get every month.
And is it a set amount no matter what the investments do, or does it depend on what the investments pay out?
It just says whatever is divided between me and my two relatives, including the relative that is the executor of the will now. It says in the will that I'm supposed to get a certain amount, and without being too specific, it's less than $500
a month. Okay.
So
let me ask you this.
Supposed to supplement what I'm already making.
Do you want to take the $500 a month, or would you rather that just stay in the trust and then use the trust for retirement? And how old are you, Rob?
I'm in my 30s.
So how much longer? So right now, would you like to use a little bit of income every month? Would it help to supplement, or do you want the whole?
It would help to supplement it, but I want the majority of it to go towards my retirement since I don't have anything, and that's what I'm wanting.
All right. Well, the reality, this is really an investment question then. Is that you've got to look at this and say, look, I don't really need the $500 a month. A little bit of supplement will be fine in the interim. But long term, this is more about this should be invested for growth, a little bit of income that gets reinvested over time. That's really the question here. And then, of course, you're going to have some complication when it comes to the trustee. But send me an email. Go to westmoss.com. I'm happy to continue this conversation. There's a lot to think about and talk about here. Go to westmoss.com. There's an upper right-hand corner email box. Those emails come straight to me. And we'll continue the conversation about what could be a very sticky situation. You'll listen to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Brian Ely, the formidable, is adding me to the list of great American writers right now because of my analogy that comes to the economy. Hot water versus cold water. I'm a 2-to-1 hot versus cold. You put the two together, we have warm, and that's what we want. It's kind of Goldilocks, and we love the warm porridge. We don't like it too hot. We don't like it too cold. And of course, Ryan making fun of me for my kindergarten-oriented analogies, but we've got to be able to bring this all back to something that we can... The market's complicated enough. Why not untangle it and make it simple? For a guy like Ryan Ealy, who is akin to Larry Kudlow, future economic advisor to the president of the United States, one of the most well-schooled, well-versed humans in America, maybe it's not quite enough for Ryan, but for the rest of us, let's go hot plus cold equals warm. I'm okay with that. And of course, this all gets back to assets or liabilities, whatever you want to call this, the good things happening in the economy versus things that are dragging us down. And I want to get to this in just a minute. And by the way, the ratio is about 2-to-1, hot versus cold. And I want to talk about that in a minute, but we'll first go back to this goods versus experiences. And this is the changing and the shifting. We're talking all today about demographics around the world. We know that we are growing as a world population. We know that in the United States, we've got demographics. By the way, we're growing here as well. It's not rapid growth, but we have this slow march larger, call it 1-2% a year. And a lot of this depends on how much immigration happens in the United States. But we are continuing to grow slowly but surely, the population growth, which is obviously a good thing for the economy. But it also has something, I go back to how we're spending our money as consumers. Widely known, 71% of GDP in the United States has to do with what we spend, consumption. And the consumption, though, our patterns are changing over the last 16 years. And this is something that I think of the Longhorn versus the Lululemon. And what's happening is we're opting less and less for the Lululemons of the world, which, if you're not familiar with Lululemon, it's a high-end, fancy, athletic store where you buy yoga pants and beyond, and you can wear these all the time. And it's not just for athletic classes or yoga class. It's kind of casual, cool, hip athletic wear. Athletica, I believe they call that. Ryan Ealy, by the way, is wearing Lululemon right now. He's got some Lululemon yoga pants on along with his Lululemon t-shirt. And they do make some guys stuff. It used to be, I think, mostly just female. Today, it's both. And part of this then goes back to, how are we consuming? Are we buying stuff or are we spending money on experiences? So think of it this way. Think of it Longhorn versus Lululemon, or Chops if you're in Atlanta, the restaurant, Buckhead Life restaurant, Chops versus Chico's, the clothing store. So think about general merchandise. Think about what is general merchandise as far as in the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they keep track of all sorts of economic data, TVs, clothing, cosmetics, furniture, toys, auto parts. So cars are separate, by the way. Phones. That's what general merchandise is. Now think about another category, food service and drinking places. So think about restaurants and think about bars and think about restaurant bars. And I think the best example of that would be something like Longhorn or Outback Steakhouse, where it's a little bit of an experience to go there. So think about real personal consumption expenditures. They call this PCE. If you go back to the year 2000, PCE was about $8 trillion in the United States. Today, it's about $11.5 trillion. That's 2016. And that's the total amount of goods and services we spend money on, we consume, we buy here in the United States. So it's gone up significantly. It's gone up almost $4 trillion in the last 16 years. So we're still buying and spending more and more money on goods and services. But as we look at a world and think about the impact of this, and here are the numbers, by the way. If you look at the general merchandise percentage of retail sales on what we spend in America, that's gone from about 15% of our of GDP down to 12%. So it's been this steady decline from 15 all the way down to 12%. But at the same time, we have gone from about 9% of our spending on food and drinking places, Longhorn, from 9% all the way up to 12%. So you see these very different trajectories. We are reducing, we're not reducing what we're spending. Again, remember, we've grown almost $4 trillion of what we're spending in the last 16 years as a nation. But the percentage of where that money is going is shifting dramatically. Again, general merchandise stores, retail sales have gone from 15% down to about 12%, while food service, drinking places, bars, restaurants, and combo places, combination, has gone from 9 all the way up to 12%. And you think about every small percentage point on a $17 trillion economy, it's a very big shift of what we've seen. And we see the implication of this. I mean, look at what's happening to Sears, the disintegration of that company. I mean, we're talking about the closure of 850 Sears and Kmart's, 50,000 employees have lost their job. I mean, this is a travesty when it comes to what was a great, at one point, a great American retailer. The same thing with Macy's. I mean, Macy's isn't in nearly the, doesn't look like they're not in nearly the dire scenario that Sears is in, but Macy's is closing 100 stores out of 730. Reducing workforce by 10,000 people. So you see that there's some real issues happening within these retailers that we can continue to hear about. I mean, look at Sears stock down 95% in the last several years. So here's a, and I charted this out. If you go back on a five-year chart, S&P 500 is up 73%. Macy's is down 15%. So not a good scenario for Macy's, but Sears is down 76% in the last 5 years. So that's a disaster. Amazon, on the other hand, up 330%. So we are spending. We're just shifting how we spend. We've gone from retailers to online retailers, and we've gone and we continue to go from general merchandise to experiences. Longhorn over Lululemon. And that's, so it doesn't mean that the U.S. economy is faltering or having issues. It just means that we're spending our money differently. And that trend, I don't see any reason that trend goes away. By the way, Ryan, we've got a WSB McDonald's weekend prize back at some point. You let me know when we're ready for that. But are we ready right now? No, not right now. We will do that. That's coming up here, so stay tuned for that. But here's the most popular story, by the way, on our Facebook page. Now, we write about these things from time to time, but I posted on Facebook an article about how the opinions of today's celebrities do not hold as much value today as they used to. But I simply said, and I wrote a couple paragraphs on this. This is just quick about what obviously happened with Meryl Streep. But I asked, do you think Meryl Streep was out of line for her comments last Sunday? That's all I asked on Facebook. And we have over 1,000 comments on that one post. So people obviously care about that. And it's just a tremendous reaction to that event that happened only about a week ago. And again, over 1,000 comments on Facebook. Just fascinating what gets the most traction. Of course, even though we write about money stories every day, sometimes it's the more general news stories that get the most reaction. But let's go and talk about, though, just for a minute, the difference between, as we're talking about, a shift from the consumer in what we're spending in stores versus experiences. As that shifts, let's take a look at what the economy and the stock market look like over the next, let's call it the next 6 months to the next year, and things that look as though they're supportive of the market versus taking away from it, constructive versus destructive, good versus bad. And I look at here and I say, well, let's talk about the things that are net positive as we look out in the next 6 months. Well, number one, we know that we've got a Federal Reserve that's still in, consider this easy mode, meaning that they still are supportive of goosing the economy a little bit. They've barely raised interest rates. Remember, at the end of last year, rates ticked up just 0.25%. There's talk that they'll do that several more times this year, but we still know that they are, quote, easy and accommodative. So that's number one, is that we have an easy Fed. And by the way, and around the world, central banks around the world are also even easier than the United States. So monetary policy in general, Fed, positive for the markets and the economy. By the way, the economic growth from everything that I see, we're going from a third quarter of 2016 was close to 3.5%. It was really around 3.5%. We could see that continue to get even stronger from here as we go into 2017. We know that, again, number three, fiscal policy gets even easier here because we know we have the prospect of lower taxes, personal and corporate. We know that we've had number four here on my list, inflation is still at a very good level. We've got a little bit of inflation, but not we're not worried like we were a year ago or 2 years ago about deflation. So inflation at a slow to moderate pace is a good thing. And that's where we find ourselves today. Number five, commodity prices have stabilized to some extent. We remember $100 oil then dropped to $25 oil. That was a cratering of oil prices and a very unstable environment for big energy companies. Today, it's more of, we find ourselves a little bit more in a range for commodity prices or oil prices in the $50 to $65 range, which is a good thing for the economy. And then, of course, we've got this potential for a new administration that's going to change what happens economically, at least in the next couple of years. So we've got this less gridlock in the government, and we actually might see something get done. Then there's optimism around that right now. And you take that, those six positives, effectively for that I would say that are supportive for a better stock market over the next year, relative to the cold water that you could pour on this argument. Number one, war versus peace. I don't know if we're probably in a less stable environment with this new administration if over the next year. So that's a potential issue. I still worry about the fiscal health and the debt we have in America, and that budget deficit has started to grow again. And then I worry a little bit about free trade and protectionism. I don't think that's going to necessarily be as bad as we might think it is, or you'll hear commentator-wise. But those are three negatives or cold water additives when you're looking at what this market could do over the next year. Put the two together, it's really kind of 2-to-1. So I see twice the amount of positives as I do negatives. And that's how I'd like to see it. You never want to see a scenario where everything points to green. We've always got to have a balance to keep markets in check. And that's exactly where I think we are, at least for now, as far as the outlook is concerned. We've got a WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack coming up straight ahead. So stay tuned right here for more Money Matters on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
The time passes so quickly here on Sunday mornings. It's time for WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The prize line, 404-741-0750. Ryan, what's going on?
The WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack is a pair of tickets to see Billy Joel in concert on April 28th at Atlanta Braves SunTrust Park, produced by Live Nation, and a pair of tickets to see Chicago and the Doobie Brothers in concert on June 23rd at Verizon Amphitheater, produced by Live Nation. This week's trivia question for our winner, Wes, I'm reviewing Nobel Prize winners in literature, Toni Morrison, Joseph Brodsky, Saul Bellow, Isaac Bashevis, Singer, Steinbeck, Hemingway, Faulkner. I don't see your name in here.
Yes.
We'll get that adjusted
yet
later this afternoon. The question, though, Billy Joel's playing, but there's another American singer who just was awarded a Nobel Prize in literature. really a songwriter. What American songwriter was just awarded the Nobel Prize in 2016?
404-741-0750. I think Ryan's just trying to get me back from my Lululemon comments. I didn't make this stuff up. I mean, it just this is the real world. So
very comfortable pair of sweatpants.
Ryan, I love your Lululemon. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, Ryan and myself included, find us at westmoss.com. There is a contact button. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. If you have questions about your own scenario or situation, we're happy to talk that through. We're happy to sit down. We're right here in Atlanta. Or schedule a call or come do it in person and help you through. Enjoy the rest of this warm, beautiful Sunday. I'm going to the Hawks games with three of my four boys, so that should be fun. Enjoy the rest of this Sunday and stay tuned for more the best programming on the planet right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.